today's Creator Corner, we wanted to do something that's sort of adjacent to soulmates. Because if you're adding something like soulmates to your story, inevitably you're adding an element that is world building in and of itself. So today's Creator Corner is about world building. And we're going to talk about what is world building and then how do we communicate the worlds that we've built to our readers in an effective way. So first of all, just to set things up, I kind of want to describe what we mean by world building. It's a really broad term. It's used very broadly in fandom spaces and in non-fandom creator spaces because worlds are broad, and when we build them, that requires a lot of stuff. So it makes sense in that way. World building has sort of two parts to it. As I just said, there is the actual decision-making that you as a creator do to build the world, the things that you decide about the world. And then there is the act of inserting that information or providing that information to the reader in a way that's effective and engaging, but also gives them the foundation they need to understand what's going on to the degree that you want them to understand. So focusing for a minute on the part of world building that's kind of between you and the page, that includes a whole bunch of stuff, names for your original characters, for the towns that they're in. If you're building the actual space, it could be whole planets, the names of spaceships, the personalities and characterization of any original characters you have. And that can be like almost the entire cast of your story, or it could be, you know, Tony's kid and everybody else is from canon. It can be things like political systems, everybody's jobs. If you have an alternate universe, you know, what does Natasha do as a day job if she's not a superhero? That's part of world building. It can be something, you can be writing a story that's totally canon compliant in every single way, and you still need to do world building. Like, what's Clint's favorite food? Where does Tony get his suits? These are all things that are questions that the MCU hasn't answered for us, but may come up in your story. So that is all part of world building. It's a lot to think about. It's my least favorite part of writing, if I'm totally honest. I usually outsource names because I'm very, very bad at naming things. Flame is very good at naming things. And I much prefer thinking about plot and characterization than I do world building, which is part of why I like writing fan fiction, because if I don't feel like making a world, there's a world right there built for me. And if I want to make certain parts of a world, I can just make those parts and then funnel in everything else that we already have. So that's definitely an appeal when it comes to world building. But Flame, I know you love AUs, and you, I would say, mostly write AUs. So I think we have very different opinions on the building part of world building.
Yeah, it's funny as you were saying that. I like writing fan fiction because I don't like doing characterizations. So I like that we have the characters already and that I can play with everything else. The idea of writing original fiction terrifies me because of the characterizations. Because as much as I love writing original characters, and I really do, I mean, anyone that reads my stuff can tell that I like playing around with original characters sometimes. They make really good side characters, but I feel too much pressure creating characterizations for the main characters. But I really do adore building whole new worlds for them. I love those little details. Marie did a while ago, I think actually this time last year, she took a fic that I had written on Anonymous, probably for an exchange or something, and just went through on a notes app and started circling every single thing in it that she could tell was me. And I hadn't told her it was me. She hadn't baited that fic. And she just went through and said, this is how I know it's a Flame fic. Like, this is how I know it's you. And she's right. It's all my tics. Like, I will always, every time there's a restaurant, I will give it a specific name because it'll be a restaurant that I ate at that week. Like, the WhatsApp thing that everyone makes fun of me for is part of world building for me. Cause like, I think I said already in this episode, I spend most of my life on WhatsApp. So I want these humans to spend most of their life on it.
So when you pull stuff, like what kind, like, do you have like an idea of what percent of world building factoids you're pulling from real life? Like you name all your restaurants after real restaurants and stuff like that.
Probably most of them. I mean, all names come from whatever television show I'm watching at the time or the room I'm sitting in when I need it. I think for there was one series that I wrote and all the names of the students I was teaching that semester are in the fic.
That's great. I just end up like naming Morgan's hamster Lip Chap or something because I don't have to.
I did that. I love specificity. Because to me, the more specific the story, sometimes the wider it can apply to things. Mm. So I love naming intersections in New York, and those come from the top of my head, like very frequently. I will always tell you what neighborhood I have Steve and Bucky from in Brooklyn. Because even if that means nothing to anybody else, there's a difference between Bushwick and Red Hook. And Weehawken, and like that means something. Well, that's Jersey, but like that means something to me, and it centers me into what kind of vibe I'm giving for that, for their characterization, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
And so I also love being specific about where I'm very particular. I think this is one of the only like dumb hills I will die on. Is Sarah Rogers's relationship with Ireland. Like, it is a dumbass hill, but I'll die on it. And I have a very specific history history of how she came and why she came and where on the island she was from and how she works with her diaspora and her relationship with the diaspora. And I've got a couple options, but it all comes from the same place. Her maiden name to me is always McCool. That's the one I always use. And that connects to a bigger world for me. But I love the dumb things too of like, I sneak it in, like in Guttersnipe, which I'm writing right now, one of the little asides in a paragraph as Steve's monologue is telling us that he knows Tony. And one of the things is that Tony's obsessed with Swiss cake rolls, Little Debbie Swiss cake rolls. And it's the snack that he doesn't tell anybody about.
I don't think I've ever had one.
Oh my God, I love them. They are not food, but I love them so much.
They're like in Twinkie category, right?
Yeah. So they're just chocolate
Styrofoam
cake.
Yeah.
They're a roulade. Like they're a chocolate cake wrapped around cream icing, completely dipped in chocolate.
I can imagine what it tastes like. We have something similar here. I don't think we have those exactly. We have Joe Louis, which are, I think they're not rolled up, but it's the same flavor combination.
Yeah, I mean, they're not food, but I love them with my whole heart. And my absolute go-to pastry to be bought in boxes is Tasty Cakes.
Yeah. But listeners, Flame just sent me 3 boxes of Tasty Cakes, so I'm fully on board with that. They're rapidly dwindling.
They only exist in this part of the country, so yeah. I can't have my Brooklyn boys love Tasty Cakes. So they like Little Debbie's, and those things are fun for me because to me, again, part of my job as a writer in my joy and my job for you guys as a reader is to sometimes make you feel like you could be friends with these people.
Yeah, that's nice.
Or like if you showed up at this intersection I told you about, Steve's Bakery will actually be there.
Oh, I like that.
Like that's how I see my job. And that's why I'm so panicked about historical stuff, because the world building is what I take the most importantly. And I know everyone's like, oh, it's no big deal. No. To me, it is the biggest part of this because the characters I can spin in anything. I'm good at dialogue. I know I am, but the world building is really important to me. So it's fun for me to think about how opposite ends of the spectrum we are. So the hard part for me is not the world building. The hard part for me is how to do the reveal, which is the other part that you already talked about, the reveals and when do I reveal what? And what is utilizing and like what is too much? That's my hard balance.
Yeah, and I think that kind of leads into the second half of this conversation, which is that very question. So if we've got, you know, our character sheets or our Tolkien style appendices for all this information about the world that we've built, be it whole languages and alien species or just, you know, what brand of slippers Steve wears, we have all this information, how do we put that in our stories in such a way that it gives the reader what they need, but it doesn't overwhelm them, and it doesn't interrupt the pacing or the draw of the story, the thing that pulls you to continue reading. And I think we've kind of got like a lot of little notes and ideas on the topic, but I think the fundamental question that drives everything that we're going to talk about and should drive a writer's approach to this is, what do people need in this moment, in whatever part of the story you're in? What do my readers need to know? That's the first question. And more often than not, it's much, much less than you know.
Yep.
It's important to know a lot about your world and about your characters and their backstories and what's building everything that's happening so that you can stay consistent to yourself, but you don't necessarily have to communicate at all. And most of the time, you need to communicate less even than you think you do. It's amazing what people can pick up on, but also it's amazing how much knowing these things provide your story with a structure that you're not even necessarily actively planning out, but will happen because you already know, like, oh, you know that, you know, Bucky works at a mechanic's shop on the weekend. And even though you haven't told anyone that yet, that's where his little Sim character is in your mind while you're doing other things. And then if he comes into the story, you already know what he's going to be wearing and if he's going to be tired and what time of day it is. And that just sort of, it helps drive that structure as you build. So there's a couple of ways not to share information with your reader. And the first one and the biggest one and the one that kind of is the driving force for this particular segment is the idea of info dumping. So info dumping is when there's a large passage, and I'm going to put large in air quotes because this is all very subjective and everybody's going to have a different opinion about what constitutes an info dump, how long you can expo for before you've hit info dump, all super, super personal and genre specific and so many factors, but it becomes an info dump when it is too long. However, we define too long in that moment, when you have shared too much information in too short a period of time, and it becomes either A, overwhelming for the reader, or B, interrupts the flow of the story. And it can even interrupt the flow of the story if the very first thing that you've got is an info dump, which is extremely common. You've got ideas in your head, you want to get them out, you've got a blank page, you start writing what you know, and it's all the setup for your story right there. Here's what the world's like, here's what everybody does, here's what people are wearing, just get it all in there. And the truth is, that's important for you, but the reader doesn't need to know it all yet.
Yeah, I read something once where they did the entire plot of Iron Man 1 in the first three paragraphs. And I was enraged because, first of all, they were three really long paragraphs, but also, like, there were other ways to tell that, which is one of the reasons I wanted to have this conversation, because I would, like, people may not be aware that there are other ways to tell us that story without having, like, I know the plot of Iron Man 1, like, have Tony make a reference to his nightmares in the cave, and I'm going to know that he was canonically Iron Man. Like, we're okay. You know, anyway, yeah. Continue.
Yeah. It's I think it's a natural impulse to want to get all the ideas in your head out onto the page. And I fully recommend doing that. And I think you should. And I think you should write notes at the top of it and then dump all of that in and then write chapter one after that. And you might be amazed at how little of that actually ends up explicitly being explained in your story, but how much it becomes the foundation for what does happen and how the characters do move and interact. I had a writing instructor in college who his little, I think I've mentioned this before, but one of his little like sayings was always start your story with chapter two. And the fundamental idea of that is really just get out what you need to get out for you first, make those notes, build the world, you know, describe your characters, get to know them a little bit, and then start the story. And if you're just starting out with writing, it can be hard to put down words that don't end up being in it, but sometimes you gotta change that heading from chapter one to notes and start with chapter two being chapter one. Or when I'm writing shorter fics, I usually say, my thing to myself is start 400 words later than you think you should. So wherever the story feels like it starts, skip those 400 words, either write them and then delete them or write them in your head and then start and start the story there. And that gives you a place to start where something's happening, people are talking, things are moving, the story is actually in progress, so the reader can come right in and go, okay, things are happening, here we go, I'm invested. And it also helps prevent the natural urge to do an early info dump. But the beginning is also not the only place that info dump can happen.
Jesus Christ, no. Let me say before we move on from that, though, one of my tricks to train myself, by the way, is to start the chapter or the story in the middle of a conversation.
Yeah, that's a great.
And that's a, like, that's frequent and it can be a tick and people can get annoyed at it if you do a 20 chapter fic and every single chapter starts in the middle of a conversation. So this isn't like do it this way every single time, but that's one of the, that's to me, one of the tricks that I use to make sure I'm not getting too info dumpy, because it's a lot easier for me in a conversation to remind myself how humans talk to each other and how they would talk to each other in the middle of this conversation. And then I can like go back and double check if info, if I've already tilted my hand too much, if it were. So if you're not sure how to start, that would be one of my tips, would just be to start in the middle of a conversation and write that conversation and then see what else is truly needed for people to understand what you're trying to say. And like Farid already said, I can almost guarantee you it is going to be less than you think we need.
You can kind of break your prose down into, I'm going to say four pieces. And if I end up being wrong about the number, then so be it. Exposition, which I would say is the parts where you're directly explaining something to the reader. Dialogue, when people are talking. Action. And action doesn't have to mean action in the sense of fighting or, you know, like superhero battles or whatever, just action in the sense that people are moving and descriptions of things that are happening. And then description, which would be a little bit different from exposition in that the description is engaging the five senses, no ghosts. To give the reader the atmosphere of the moment, describing what a building looks like, what a person's wearing, that falls into that. If you're worried about not knowing where to start and you don't want to start with exposition because you're worried about an info dump, pick one of the other ones and start with that. So dialogue is a great place to start. You could also start with a description. You could start with sort of a subcategory, introspection. You could start with what a character is thinking. And that might help you kind of get away from that urge to start with information. And since we were talking about dialogue, the other thing that we are going to caution you against doing with sharing world building with your reader is called As You Know Bob. And it's a very common trope, if you will, and something that... That you see a lot with writers who are starting out, because you have a fact that you want your audience to know and you don't want to just tell them in prose. That's a good first step for saying, okay, I want to do this in a more creative way. And so you want to reveal the information through dialogue, but you can run into this problem. It's called As You Know Bob, because the idea is one of the characters will say, as you know, Bob, we're in the middle of a galactic conflict.
Supernova, which is, yeah.
And they'll describe to the other character something that the other character absolutely would already know. And you have to say to yourself, if I've got two characters in this situation, and they've been living in this situation for however long they've been living in it, would they ever have a conversation like that? I would never on the podcast be like, so Flame, we are on a podcast because she knows that. And it's sort of a common tactic to try and kind of wiggle around the problem of just saying to the reader, Bob and Frank are in an intergalactic supernova, because that feels too on the nose, but the dialogue one can go the other way and be, this is unrealistic. You don't want to violate characterization by putting your world building in dialogue if it doesn't work like that.
Another version of that is where you have a character describe their relationship to the other person.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So like that, so I find that one happens more often than the, this is the world we're living in. People be like, well, you know, we have known each other for like 14 years. And that happens sometimes in human conversations, but then the other person will usually snark back and be like, yes, and I've hated you for all of them or something like that. Instead of then adding like, yes, and we met when we were in third grade. And like,
yeah,
that one can be deceptive, but I read it in fic a lot. So yeah, be cautious of that one.
Yeah, it's hard. You can really sit there with your dialogue and say, you know, what was the character's motivation for saying this? Whatever the line is, what was their motivation for saying this? And if you can't come up with a valid motivation, then the motivation might be that you wanted them to say it, which isn't a great drive for dialogue in a story. The character needs to have a reason to say it, as much as you need to have a reason to get the info across. So if the character doesn't have a reason for saying it, then you need to find another way to inform the reader what's going on. And so speaking to that, now we're going to talk about, after telling you what not to do, we're going to talk about some advice for how you can work world building in, and you can share that information with your reader in ways that doesn't, that isn't an info dump or doesn't violate characterization or feel unwieldy to the reader.
So one of my personal favorite ways, I was actually just looking for an example within my own writing because I can type it better than ever I can say it. But I really love the offhand remarks that a character will make to somebody else. Like I'll have Bucky and Sam talking and Sam will say like, right, but that time in Budapest, and Bucky, and my next thing is, well, Bucky rolled his eyes. Well, obviously, something happened in Budapest. And you guys know that. And now, and I know that as the writer, but like all I really need in that moment is for you to understand as the reader that the two of them have a history and that they're snarky and that Bucky will roll his eyes at Sam bringing something up that he doesn't want him to bring up. So I do offhand remarks a lot. Obviously it also helps that the three characters I write that, of the characters I write the most, Bucky and Tony are sarcastic little shits all the time. And offhand remarks and sarcasm work really well together. So I think that's one of the ones I use the most to give little like soupçons of characterization as you kind of go in. Another very famous one is the audience stand-in, which the best example I can always think of for this is that Hermione Granger is the audience stand-in in Harry Potter. She is how we get almost all the exposition of the wizarding world because she is the smartest one and loves teaching people and pontificating. And especially in the early books, just explains everything to Harry all the time. So like she is the explainer. Harry's a little bit of the audience stand-in, but really what she does is she can just tell everything. She info dumps all the time, but it doesn't feel weird because it's authentic within the relationships of that story.
Yeah. So since Harry doesn't know the wizarding world, if you've never read Harry Potter, Harry is coming into the wizarding world as a teenager. And so he doesn't know any of this. So we, as the reader, get to learn about the world as Harry learns about the world. So it makes sense for him to say like, I don't know what this is. And then Hermione gets to explain it. And by making her a bit of a know-it-all, it makes it easy to put in a lot of exposition without violating her character, because she would go on a monologue about Hogwarts history. Okay, so another way to do it is to pepper in your expo instead of putting it all in big chunks. So instead of having a big info dump at the beginning of a chapter where you say, here's what the world's like, here's how everything is, here's everybody's job, here's what's going on, here's the name of all the spaceships that are ever going to show up in the whole book. You can use exposition and you can just tell the reader facts. You can say, here is a fact. But they're best done spread out throughout the story. Now, there are some qualifications to that. It's usually not a great idea to introduce a fact right before it becomes relevant, because then it kind of gives the impression you didn't think of it until now. So it does help to take a broad overview of your story, what your plot plan is, and say, okay, what are the things I need to set up early on so that people are prepared for when that shows up later on in the story? And what are things that can just kind of come up as the story goes along? And then take those world building sheets you've made either in your head or actually on paper or digital paper and sort of just sprinkle them like salt throughout the story. Even if you're just saying, hey reader, here's a straight up fact, you can spread them out like that. And then my favorite one is implication, which kind of all, you know, kind of leans into like offhand remarks generally involve some implication. But the idea with implication is to say things that you know will lead your reader to the answer about the world that you want them to get to. So let's say that we've got an AU and Clint works at an animal shelter. If you just say to your reader in the story, Clint worked at the animal shelter, Bucky went to pick him up after his shift. Nothing wrong with them. That's straightforward. It's expo. It tells the reader what they need to know. You can say something like that. But if you've got a bit too much world building, or you're worried about an info dump, or you just want to twist it up a little bit, you can instead imply this, have Bucky get on the subway or get in his car or his motorcycle or whatever, go to the animal shelter. He comes in the door. Clint comes out of the back in his scrubs looking tired. And he says, oh, that was a long shift today. Thanks for coming to pick me up. You never have to say Clint works at the animal shelter, because by setting up the scene that way, it's so heavily implied as to be obvious that that is indeed his job. So when we're talking about implication, we're saying take the facts, and then instead of telling the reader the fact, show the reader the fact. And this comes back to what we've talked about in previous Creator Corners about show, don't tell. And that's how show, don't tell lines up with world building, because it's exactly the same thing that we were talking about then. If you just tell everybody all of the things they need to know, they're going to be overwhelmed and maybe a little bit bored. But instead, use that implication. The other benefit is if you kind of play with it, you can be more and less obvious. And the times that you're less obvious, the reader will actually engage with trying to solve what it is that's being communicated. If there's a little bit of a puzzle, something to figure out or something to think about, that nugget can actually help keep readers engaged with your story, because they're going to want to keep reading and see if the world that they're building in their head is lining up with the, with, you know, as you give them facts, they're fitting those in and they're starting to build that world themselves. And that is engaging enough that it's going to make your story more engaging as well.
My favorite thing is when somebody in my comments will be like, I saw you do that and I know that this means blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even know that is not what that means. But I'm so thrilled. Okay, we go. I love it when they solve puzzles that I didn't even set up as puzzles. The other thing I will say is that we have talked a lot in this bit that makes it seem like a lot of planning and preparation needs to go into writing. And I think it does. I'll be honest. And I know Ferret thinks it does too. We do most of this in our heads. We've both talked about like a tumble dryer of ideas, or I need to drive around, or I'm going to think about this for a long time. That's one of the ways in which our process parallels. However, I know there are fixes that doesn't work for me for Bridgerton right now, as we're recording this in March of 2021, I am still furiously plotting what the Bridgerton AU is going to be. You will now hear me whine about this for the rest of the calendar year, everybody, so buckle up. But I have it's probably a 5-page Google Doc right now that I will let nobody else see, because the world feels so big, I do have to get it all down on paper. For Gutter Snipe, which is the one I'm publishing right now, that's the My Fair Lady AU, it all lived in my head and I have nothing written down except for the fic. However, and I think I said however as a transition already. This is why I should always be writing and never speaking.
Please don't read the transcript of this one, folks.
Never read it. When I first started writing, I did have a lot more notes, physical notes, keeping track of details and the pieces of the world I wanted to build and where things were going. And my ability to kind of keep it all in my head or marinate it in my head has come with practice, but it's also come with the wider that I read. I am more comfortable with world building now because I read a lot more things that do world building. I have learned from the example of other people what things that I need to tell a reader because they're the things I wanted to know as a reader. Mm. I learned the rhythms from other people. And this is one of the isms of this podcast. The strongest writers are the widest readers. I will stand by that until the day that I die. And one of the reasons that you can always tell the difference between Ferret and my writing, I'll just be really honest, is that the books we read are really different. The fics overlap a little bit more. But like when we talk about our favorite authors and our favorite stories, they are different. We write dialogue very similarly because we have some of the same favorite TV shows. And that's kind of how I think a lot of writing works, is it, we're all stealing from everybody all the time, by the way. That's how the human brain works. And world building is no different. So if you've been listening to this and you are completely overwhelmed by everything that we had to say, I understand. There are points in my writing journey where I would have been too. So just take a breath, read some stories, read some fics where you really liked the world building. I certainly can recommend a few if you DM me where I was really amazed at the world building. If you read traditional books, do it. If you watch television or you watch movies, I mean, they're doing world building really interestingly right now in Falcon and Winter Soldier, where at the second episode just debuted. And that's going really interestingly, the way they're dropping in things and not blowing everything up at one time, which is why I hate week-to-week television shows, but that's a separate rant.
We've moved on from that, I thought. Isn't this the age of binging? What are they doing?
I don't know what Disney is doing to us, but I'm somehow programmed and traumatized. All that to say, there are a lot of ways to do this. And it is also up to you. How you do it, your mileage may vary, how it feels to you. So figure out a way that will work. If you can't figure out how you want to do your own characters in your brain, that's fine. There's lots and lots of tools out there of like, here are the 20 questions to ask about your character so that you can start thinking about your character. If I explained that clearly at all, I don't know if I did. But all of this can be hard. All of this can be easy, just depending on where you fall in. But the best way to get stronger at it is to practice and just to get stuff down on the page and kind of go from there. The mistakes that we both said, we have done. We have absolutely made those mistakes. We have done the things that we told you not to do, for sure. And the way that we didn't do them again was that somebody pointed them out to us. And this is where alpha and beta readers can really come in and help you.
At the end of the day, all of this is subjective. What one person thinks is an info dump or too much world building, someone else is going to disagree with. They're going to love it. It depends who your reader is, which obviously with fan fiction could be anybody. And it depends what genre you're writing in. Think about how much expo there is in Lord of the Rings versus, you know, a rom-com. So as much as this was sort of presented as do and do nots, it's not really about rules or right or wrong. It's about you just being thoughtful, critical, and engaged with your own work, giving it some thought, letting that question of what do I need to show the reader be a driving force, and the rest will come, as Flame says, with practice and with help and with feedback and with reading and with listening to us, I hope.